Absolutely. This is the Popmatic Podcast for October 26th, 2016.
Somewhere between science and superstition, there is another world. The world of darkness.
It's the Popmatic Podcast, where you can freak out with your library card out. I'm Ringmaster Mike the Dogface Boy, and joining me today are...
Jeremy.
Bill.
Sarah.
Amanda.
And Eve Orobot.
And we're coming to get you.
Yeah, that's right. Eda Barbara. Tonight's theme is Shocktober. Our annual carnival of dark delights. Step up, boys and ghouls. You get recommendations that'll scare the tattoos off the tattooed man and make the bearded lady pull out her beard in terror.
And then Amanda talks.
And then Amanda will say something to us adorbs.
Talks about rainbows and unicorns.
You know what's scary? How cute puppies are. What do you have, Sarah?
Alrighty then. Nice little lead in.
Organizations for squares.
Well, I thought about discussing some of the strange things I've come across in archives, including the Book of Suicides and Other Deaths.
Ooh,
or the blood-stained suicide note we found in a will.
That's cool. Do
tell.
Well, I thought I'd spare you guys the morbidity. It's kind of depressing me a little bit the more I read that lady's suicide note. So we're going to pass on that.
I've always wanted to read a suicide note that I didn't write.
Oh, God.
That was the joke I would have made if you... Anyway.
If you were filled with darkness.
Wow, okay. Moving on. Oh, yeah. Instead, I thought I'd recommend a read that intends to terrify you in some way or another. Trigger Warnings by Neil Gaiman is a book that's proclaimed from the beginning to be filled with stories that, quote, might upset you. These stories include death and pain, tears and discomfort, violence of all kinds, cruelty, and even abuse. That's a straight quote from Neil Gaiman, not myself, because I don't know that I agree with that.
Abuse.
Yes, but it includes a little kindness as well, and possibly even a dash of happy endings. If you're not familiar with it, the title Trigger Warnings refers to a popular phrase used to caution readers about upsetting content ahead. It's a roadblock for reading, a ye be warned, all who enter here kind of thing. I think the title is suiting because I've never read any of his books before, so I wasn't aware at how strange and psychologically unsettling some of his stories could be. He's right in his description that the stories don't seem to follow a pattern, stylistically, I mean. They do all coincide that they are peculiar, and many of them make you retrace your reading steps to understand what just happened. My favorite stories from it are The Thing About Cassandra, The Sleeper and the Spindle, and The Truth Is A Cave in the Black Mountains. The Thing About Cassandra is merely a story about someone with a twisted imagination, and ends a lot more depressing than it begins. It makes you question your sanity a little bit, too.
Yeah, that's right.
I was a little worried after I read that one.
Going mad to tear, yeah.
Do what?
I mean, la la la. Puppies.
Puppies, yeah. The Sleeper and the Spindle is a darker version of Sleeping Beauty, with a female heroine this time. Woohoo! It's nothing like Disney's Sleeping Beauty, my favorite Disney movie of all time, by the way.
Me too. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's the best.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I like Aladdin.
Seems like a dark horse favorite. Mm-hmm.
It's got Maleficent.
That's right. Excuse me.
Sword in the Stone.
Yeah, that's right. But
it's got Merlin. He's great.
That was dumb.
Whatever.
Disney fights.
But I liked this new take anyway. It's closer to the original Perrault telling and definitely more evil than the cartoon. And The Truth Is A Cave in the Black Mound is a longer story than the others and is chilling because it's somewhat about human nature and the flaw of underestimating someone. The story is about two men that are seeking out a cave for what's believed to be gold inside. At least that's what you think they're doing. But lo and behold, as the story unravels, you find out more about each character and what they're hiding from one another.
Woohoo.
I don't read many short story collections, but after reading this one, I think that's something I want to change. This collection not only made me want to read more of his books, but also made me wonder what my trigger warning would be for, actually. Mm-hmm. Didn't think about that. But what it is that terrifies me most when reading or watching movies? I think the answer to that is reality when applied to horror or thriller movies. I love watching the horror films with monsters and CGI ghosts, don't get me wrong. But what gives me chills and nightmares is when a horror story is created without using a lot of digital enhancement. And more specifically, I'm referring to demons when made realistic. For example, the characters in The Conjuring. The scene in that movie that I would like a trigger warning for was when the witch suddenly appears on top of the wardrobe scaring the girls.
Yeah.
The witch's face was that just completely horrified me. They did a good job making her look like a demon or possessed or whatever she was. And without the use of CGI. Well done. I almost wet my pants. But good news for those that...
It's a different kind.
Yes. Urinary warning.
But good news for those that want to wet their pants. We have trigger warnings here at the library in many formats.
Wow.
Yep. Even though that one's not... It's not going to make you wet your pants.
I needed a spit tape warning. Took a sip of coffee.
We have The Conjuring, Conjuring 2, and Annabelle, and they're doing another Annabelle movie for some reason.
Yeah, and they're doing one on the nun from The Conjuring 2.
Oh, yeah.
That thing terrified me.
Nun is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I want none of that nun.
The rest of the movie, meh. The nun, yes. Terrified me.
So, do you have anything about nuns, Amanda?
Yes. No, I stopped listening.
Ouch.
I'll have none of that. Let's not make a habit of this.
Okay, so...
That's nonsense.
Nice. Anybody?
My aesthetic is permeating the podcast on the Shocktober edition. That was great.
Okay, so it's no secret that I'm not a big fan of horror and things of that nature. So this means finding something to talk about for Shocktober is always challenging. So this year I started early. A book actually came across my desk in May that I knew would be perfect for our discussion, and I have saved it until now. So I've talked about a lot of cookbooks on this podcast, but I've never seen a book on how to cook children. No, you heard me right. Not cook with children. This is a book about cooking children from renowned witchy chef Asmelia Sniff. Now, the full title of this book is How to Cook Children, a Grisly Recipe Book for Gruesome Witches. Now, Ms. Sniff had a ghostwriter who was Martin Howard, and it is illustrated by Colin Stimson. So, the recipes come from Chef Sniff's famous chef friends. From Barfa Stewart, we get hag boogers with lumpy sauce and French guys.
Yeah, French guy.
This honorable lady, Sushi, S-O-O-she, offers up seared tina in boy sauce on a bed of fragrant lice.
Mike, this is the greatest book ever made.
It's very ogre.
Mike just logged into his Amazon account.
So here is an excerpt from Madeleine de la Moustache's Enfant au Escargot à Grand Oui. You must have only the finest of ingredients, and no children are superior to the French enfant. The full flavor of the mature Mateau, the delicate Dominique, the tang of Thierry, it reminds me of a joke we tell. I tried to cook a young garçon the other day, but I could not lift him into the pot. The other witch asks, how so? The first witch replies, because he was a little Hervé. Well, it is very amusing, n'est-ce pas?
Yeah, it helped that I could read it.
Yeah. So, naturally, it takes a genius to cook the perfect French dish. When you fail to remember to be French about it, throw the dish against the wall, sobbing and screaming, and then go and sulk in your room for 6 weeks. So, this is a children's book. I thought it was going to be a little bit more lighthearted, like this all the way through, but the recipes do get a little bit more specific and gruesome for my taste.
All right,
it's a children's
book? Is it
children's
book?
Children.
So, personally, I had a little trouble finishing some of the recipes. So, just to make sure I wasn't missing the joke, I checked out the book's Amazon page, and most people seem to think it was hilarious, including children.
Young Mike would have loved this.
So, if you're like Mike and have a more macabre sense of humor, this book is for you. Now... Even Gordon Ramsay got in on the fun, saying, quite simply, the best book for cooking children ever written. The recipes are mouth-watering, and Asmelia Sniff is a laugh-out-loud kitchen nightmare. There are very few chefs who can change the way we think about food, but thanks to Asmelia and her pointy-handed friends, I'll be putting youngsters on the menu in all my restaurants from now on.
F-F-M-F-G-D-F-F-M-F.
So if Gordon Ramsay likes it, it's got to be good.
That's right.
Wow. Well, Amanda wins.
Yes! It took me 6 months.
Yeah, I know. That's preparation.
Take that, Shocktober.
Wow, cool.
And a great German accent.
May we?
Oh. Very
Ooh, nice. Wow. I'm jealous again. Oh, wait. I'm envious or jealous? Envious.
Keeps getting better.
May we? Oh, well. Oh.
I'm sorry, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Long time listeners. For a long time, Messrs. Barnes et Noble had a deal going on with their notebooks. See, every Friday they would spotlight one free book. I followed their Free Fridays link for over a year. And yeah, there wasn't much for me. You know, 9/10 of the time, there's stuff like How to Mac a Marquee or Press Pause, a Kitty AV Club Mystery. See, you know, and if I was editing the show, I'd put the stinger to where I'd do a bunch more puns of that, but we don't have time. But occasionally, there were winners. Like, one week, there was an horror anthology called Occultation and Other Stories by Laird Barron, which we have on Hoopla. I'd heard of Barron before while plumbing the new fishing lists at Nightshade Books, and I must confess I liked his name and his eye patch, so I gave it a download. Yeah. Eye patch is cool. He's from Alaska, and he did the Iditarod. This guy's great. Yeah, it's cool.
He's like your ideal pirate.
This guy's amazing. You know, my favorite Alaskan one-eyed horror writer. boy, was I surprised. His stories are Lovecraftian in how they deal with cosmic horror and otherworldly entities' indifference slash contempt for mankind. But it takes out all the underlying racism and the modern hack writer's assumption that just adding a shambling Shoggoth and purple prose to your pedestrian horror story automatically makes it Lovecraftian. Can you tell I wrote this yesterday and not an hour ago? Barron has written a lot about a creature slash possible god slash something unclear called Old Leech. And he's been really coy about what it and what it wants from man, which I think is really cool. In his first anthology, The Imago Sequence, and other stories, which we have in print, he explains that leeches numb you so you don't notice that they're there, sucking out your precious blood. much like Old Leech has been manipulating humanity since caveman times. In The Croning, one of his two novels, which we both have in print, concerns a geologist named Donald Miller, who has been suffering spells of forgetfulness his entire adult life. These episodes began when his wife Michelle went on a vacation by herself when they were in their 20s and came back changed. Now in his 80s, Miller is beginning to regain very troubled memories of cultists and murder, madness and despair, all centering around a seemingly loving and devoted wife. Can he convince his kids he's not crazy before Michelle takes their daughter on a little vacation to celebrate her 21st birthday? Bum, 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 bum. Bum, bum, bum.
Dun, dun, dun.
Barron is one of the leading lights of the modern horror genre, and through him and plentiful recommendation links on Amazon and Goodreads, I discovered a lot of new and creepy authors. Check them out. Unlike Old Leech, they don't suck.
Nice.
I feel like mine was scarier than yours.
Well, I mean, yours does sound cooler, but
this is good. Mine had French witches. What did yours have? Leeches?
Mine had leeches. Inverter.
They're leeches. They were leeches, and they suck.
Whatever.
I think The Croning is a really cool title. It makes me uncomfortable. I don't know what it means, really. I'm sure maybe it means something, but... It makes me uncomfortable for some reason.
It's a weird word.
It's like there's something missing.
Yeah.
Like another consonant.
Like another nipple? What?
I was going to say noun. I was like conflating part of the word consonant and the word vowel to make noun. Make sense?
I'm remembering why Evil Robot would separate us when we were there. So what do you have there, dear dog?
I grew up watching sanitized versions of horror movies on the USA Network and TBS.
Woo!
This was back when TBS showed everything at 5 after the hour because Ted Turner is an innovator.
yes.
There is a chunk of my memory where it is always Halloween and there is always a marathon of Friday the 13th, Halloween, or A Nightmare on Elm Street, those movies playing. And my brother and I are in our bedroom hiding under the covers because our stepdad is in the hallway going,
I was wondering if it was going to make that noise.
Yeah.
Because scaring kids is fun when you're drunk.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to make you steak for breakfast in the morning. No, you're not, because you drank all the money.
Whoa.
Wow, just got real.
Well, the scariest thing. Uncomfortable family drama.
Shocktober. So how did movies like this gain prominence, and why did my family own a VHS copy of the first Friday the Friday the 13th movie, even though we had no VCR.
truly shocking.
For the answer to one of these questions, you can turn to Jason Zinnemann's Shock Value, How a Few Eccentric Outsiders Gave Us Nightmares, Conquered Hollywood, and Invented Modern Horror. This book is about what the subtitle says. So it traces the horror genre's sort of transition from schlocky kid stuff to art with a capital A and probably a question mark, and onward to the sequel factory of the 1980s and beyond. We're in beyond now. Zinnemann pinpoints 1968's Rosemary's Baby as the turning point from the old horror into new horror. So this film was produced by William Castle, who was a producer and director, did a bunch of horror movies, and he did this movie called The Tingler.
Starring
Vincent Price. And when they showed The Tingler, he got these vibrating buzzers to be in theater seats. So like when The Tingler was tingling, you would get tingled in your seat. That's good. Castle originally read the book and loved it and optioned it and originally wanted to direct the film, but the studio was like, The Tingler. And so they thought he was kind of cheesy and old guard, and they gave it to Roman Polanski, who there's nothing scary about him, and the rest is history. So that same year, the zombies of George Romero's Night of the Living Dead shambled into theaters with expressions so blank Americans could project fears of the Vietnam War on their faces with absolute clarity. And meanwhile, at USC, John Carpenter and Dan O'Bannon were palling around, and they eventually made the film Dark Star together, and after their friendship ended, they went on to create two of the most enduring characters in modern horror, Michael Myers and the alien Xenomorph, respectively. Even later still, Wes Craven's Last House on the Left shocked people with its graphic depiction of sexual violence. William Friedkin's The Exorcist offended Catholics and scared Sarah because there's a demon in it. Toby Hooper's The Texas Chainsaw Massacre bored Mike but taught the Ramones how to pronounce the word massacre correctly. And also Brian De Palma dumped a bucket of blood on Sissy Spacek. So this book is basically like a primer.
Yes. Do
you guys like saying primer?
Primer.
Makes me so uncomfortable saying primer.
Yeah.
I know. Anyway, this book will prime your pump for horror movies in the 1970s, which themselves are basically a template for everything else that came after. There's some How the Sausage is Made stuff about studio maneuverings and creative serendipity and analysis of how the films influence each other and the genre as a whole. A review that I read of the book sort of points out that the author doesn't really examine the why of these films. It says he doesn't really dig deep enough. And I didn't find that to be problematic or anything. I thought he did a good job. But if you want more info on this, I highly recommend David J. Scull's The Monster Show, A Cultural History of Horror. This talks about the genre as a whole, not just specifically in the 70s. Kind of goes way back. And some really interesting insights into the development of the genre, like how soldiers who were disfigured in World War I came home and their disfigurements really freaked people out because this was the first time, like this is the first mechanized war and also the first time that people were surviving such gruesome injuries and people didn't know what to make of it. And then later on, Lon Chaney wore creepy makeup and people were like, hey, this is awesome. And then Frankenstein came. And so it was sort of like that stuff was a way of dealing with this actual real world horror. So you can check both those books out and read them and enjoy them. Bill?
To be clear,
sorry. Oh.
Demons are only terrifying if they're realistic.
Oh, no. Well, yeah.
I think barfing pea soup on priests is not realistic.
it looks fake.
Your mother sold socks that smell.
The Exorcist didn't terrify me nearly as much as
I wasn't scared of The Exorcist.
I didn't find The Exorcist scary at all, but, you know.
No, I wasn't scared. Really. It was creepy, I wasn't scared by it.
I think it was scared when I saw it on USA, but I don't know if I've ever seen it.
I think, you know, if we were around in the early 70s, maybe it would have been a lot scarier.
Oh, yes, it was.
Yeah.
What do you think, Bill? Exactly.
Opening weekend. I shouldn't have been there.
Were you like 12?
Yeah, I was going to say you were little.
I went in with my aunt, my brother.
That's a cool aunt.
Yeah, really.
Nice.
But I was the only eighth grader.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Submitted for your approval, Richard Matheson, born February 20th, 1926, died June 23rd, 2013. an American writer and screenwriter of mainly science fiction, fantasy, and horror. He has written several influential books and short stories, for example, The Shrinking Man, Hell House, What Dreams May Come, Bid Time Return, A Stir of Echoes, and Button Button. He was also one of the main writers behind The Twilight Zone. But his most influential novel, or I should say novella, is I Am Legend. I Am Legend is the 1954 horror fiction that greatly influenced the zombie genre and the worldwide apocalypse due to disease in popular literature.
Yeah.
The basic plot of the novel is Robert Neville is the sole survivor of a pandemic, and Robert Neville's adversaries aren't zombies, but vampires. It has been filmed three times, The Last Man on Earth, 1964, starring Vincent Price, not that good.
Oh, I can like it.
The Omega Man, starring Charlton Heston, 1971. I've always liked this movie.
Yeah, it is ridiculous.
But it uses the book as a jumping off point.
It's more like mutants, and like they're like albino mutants.
Yes. And in 2007, I Am Legend, starring Will Smith. Let's not go there. Yeah. It was also adapted into a radio play, a comic book adaptation, and the one adaptation that people don't know about is really a ripoff. George Romero adaptation, or should I say ripoff, Night of the Living Dead. Romero admits he ripped off I Am Legend for his movie. Mm-hmm. Night of the Living Dead begat The Walking Dead, which begat World War Z and all the other video games and books and zombie walks. If you haven't read I Am Legend by Richard Matheson, then you don't have the zombie walks and Resident Evil. So my recommendation, read I Am Legend by Richard Matheson.
It is great. Hey, fellas and ladies.
Hey,
Mike.
Hey,
Mike.
What do we do? I tickle my fancy.
Well, maybe the library has it. Maybe the library has it. Either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Jeremy's okay
face is really red.
Man, does this clown taste funny to you?
All right. I'm taking a page from Mike's book and continuing my tickle my fancy with some spooky, gory stuff.
Oh, boy.
Yes. With it being Shocktober, I usually spend a little more time during this month scouring Netflix and the latest releases for a good horror film. Something with a twist or just a good old-fashioned horror flick.
The twist.
I'm not trying to sound like a horror snob or anything, but it usually takes
You're
a lot.
You're in the right room if you are.
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
Put it out there.
That's true.
Not scary.
But it usually takes a lot to scare me when it comes to movies. As I've already established, it's the faces. It's the horror faces. Take me to a haunted house and I'll scream the entire time, but movies, meh. A few movies that have come up to scratch. I already mentioned this one above, but The Conjuring. The Conjuring 2, actually just The Nun, nothing else in that movie. The movie It, when I was a kid.
Yep.
Jeremy knows that one. We've discussed that. And The Strangers, of course. And then The Exorcist. Actually, funny story there. When I watched that movie the second time, The Exorcist, that is, I was young, let's say around 13 or 14, and I had a cousin a year younger than me that wanted to watch a movie and was curious about that one in particular. She'd never seen it before, and it was the middle of the night, and I warned her, believe me the words, you probably don't want to watch this movie right now, came out of my mouth. But her response was, if it gets too scary, we'll just turn it off. So we proceed, and a few hours later, I wake up.
That's when the horror starts.
That's right. A few hours later, I wake up, and she's upstairs sleeping with her parents. Yep, I zonked, and she got so scared that she crawled into bed with her parents. Yep. To this day, at every family get-together, I get reminded of that and how that moment also scared her into being a thoroughly devout Christian. I'm sorry, wow. I'm not sorry. Okay. You're welcome, Stephanie.
Yay, Jesus.
And I also get threatened to get sent the therapy bills all the time, which is nice.
That's why my father would not allow us to have a Ouija board, just because that's how she gets the demon in her. And that
oh, yes.
Wow.
Because... that's not the scariest movie ever.
Really? That's how I have not watched that movie in a long time, so I don't remember.
It's very quick and at the very beginning. I think they, I don't know if they show it on camera or not, but like they mention it.
That's pretty much what happens in Conjuring 2, though, I think. Yeah. She uses a Ouija board.
And a Paranormal Activity 2, perhaps?
Yeah, possibly.
I turned evil by playing Dungeons & Dragons.
But anyway, back to horror movies.
Right.
After reading a list of best horror films on Netflix, I decided to check a few of them out. Here are some I can recommend. Come Back to Me is a movie I watched a while ago, but the premise of the movie kind of still sticks with me, because it was weird.
Welcome to the hood.
Did you make them?
No, I'd be lying if I said I did.
So you didn't make them?
Up hyperventilating, disoriented.
Night terrors.
Excuse me.
You all right?
I don't know.
You have got to stop doing this!
What is happening to me?
Is everything okay?
That's none of your business. Of nightmares I can't fully remember.
Bringing you back. That's how he connects.
Come back to me.
Why would God give a Christ-like gift to the very devil himself?
It's not your typical there's something in my house thriller, but in my opinion, something a little worse. It's based on the book The Resurrectionist by Rath James White. It's about a character by the name of Dale. Already a weird name.
Wow.
It's a weird name.
Poor Dale.
Poor Chip and Dale.
Yes. Just he needs to drive a tractor to
rescue
work.
Rescue murder rangers.
I would agree with you.
It's a weird
name. It's kind of a weird name.
Yeah. But Dale has the power to bring people back to life, which sounds awesome, except when you add the ingredient that Dale is a little insane. There we go. He becomes obsessed with a female neighbor, and some really bad and crazy stuff happens. The library doesn't have this movie physically, but Hoopla has it to stream, and Overdrive has a digital copy of the book as well. So check that one out. Another recommendation I just watched the other night was We Are What We Are.
Ooh, I heard good things about that one.
Well, let's see. If I remember correctly, this movie was high on that horror film list. Pretty sure because I only looked at the top 10. But it's not a horror film in the regular paradigm that we think. No ghosts, monsters, or vampires. But instead, some crazy and very disturbing psychological terror that'll make you never want to eat again.
There's a storm coming.
It's going to get a lot worse before it gets better.
He calls us.
Amen.
We will carry on. We have kept our tradition in its purity. We do it the way that we have always done it. Iris is the eldest. It's her responsibility now.
You ready for that? That's the way it works.
I found something strange this morning.
And I believe it's human remains.
The storm has washed some bones way down creek.
We need to stick together now.
There are 30 people missing from this town in the last 20 years.
How sure are you, Doc?
I'm not.
What if we refused to do it? It would make us, wouldn't it?
I can't do this.
Your wife suffered from a rare disease.
You hungry, Doc? And we have plenty. Thank you for the sustenance we receive. Father, lift us from this world. Blessed are the Lamb, for they are his offering.
Yeah, I heard that they might have Amanda's cookbook on, ironically.
No. I couldn't even make it through the joke version, seriously.
Yeah. Because the movie synopsis says it, it's no secret that this film is about a family of cannibals. They're a religiously devout family that refuses to stray from tradition.
Oh, yeah. I heard about this movie.
Yeah. The tradition being the same beliefs and practices of the Donner Party. In between the gagging I was doing during some of the worst scenes, I was praying they'd snap out of it. I won't ruin the ending, though. I won't say it's satisfying, but it's also not satisfying. It's soothing, actually.
It's filling, like a good meal.
It's like going to Subway.
Exactly.
It's not good.
Exactly.
But,
very tasteful.
It's like Chinese food. You're hungry an hour later.
The library.
It's like Chinese dude.
Wow.
Some young guy.
Whoa.
I knew you were going to go there.
The library has a physical copy of this one for your viewing pleasure. Just don't eat a full meal before watching it. Yep.
Did you say like faces or what scares you?
Faces. Like the Conjuring, her face was just terrifying.
There are two things that it scared me. But there are two characters, and both from David Lynch things. There's like this dumpster monster in Mulholland Drive. Isn't it just in one scene? And in my head, I've made it look like old Greg from The Mighty Boosh, so it's not scary, but so it's just kind of creepy. But like
so
the first
time,
but the first time I saw it, somebody's like goes and there's this, and he's like, and it's all creepy. But then also in Twin Peaks, if you're gonna watch it, there's this demon guy named Bob who like. There'll be like picture of a room, and then like in the corner, he's like looking up like this, and he's got long hair, and it's like kind of ruggedly handsome, and wearing a denim jacket, and he's like crawling at the camera and stuff. Scared the hell out of me when I was 10 years old. Scared the hell out of me when I was 22 years old. Still scares the hell out of me. He's terrifying.
There aren't very many movies out there that have good terrifying faces.
That guy.
He's just
a regular human face, but like he's very creepy.
Editor's note. Great segue. No, really.
Amanda?
All right. So just because I don't like really scary things doesn't mean I don't like kind of scary things. And since Jeremy has somehow used his superpowers to trap me in comic book land, today I'm going to talk about a graphic novel called Ghostbusters International. Confused with the latest Ghostbusters All-Girl movie, which I still have yet to see. This book was written by Eric Burnham with art by Dan Scherning. Churning? I don't know how to say his name. So the thing I like most about this series is that my boys are still my boys. So in the front of the book, we are introduced to all the major characters in the story for the returning favorites, Egon, Venkman, Ray, Winston, and Janine. They quote lines from their original movie dialogue. They also play racquetball. So I hate when new writers try to change my favorite characters, but here that is not an issue. So the storyline is a Nordic bazillionaire rents out the Ghostbusters ostensibly to rid potential resort property by Venice of bad ghosts so that he can develop it. The artwork in this book is also outstanding. I've been to Venice and this looks exactly like it. It actually made me want to go back. You have to pay attention, though, because sometimes the writers and the artists are a little sneaky. Some of the side characters resemble famous faces outside of the Ghostbusters franchise. Like, I feel like at one point Judd Nelson shows up for a job interview, and he's accompanied by someone who looks surprisingly like Bob Newhart. The new crew with Egon go into a hamburger joint to bust some ghosts, only to be told, no fries, cheeps! by a guy who looks oddly like John Belushi.
Wow.
So, Ghostbusters International is numbered as the first book in a new series, but there are two big collections that actually came before it, called one is Total Containment, the other is Mass Hysteria. These are ILL only, unfortunately, but they are so worth it. They, too, pull a lot of references from pop culture. Like, Ray has flashbacks from a ghost who looks just like Joliet Jake Blues, another John Belushi reference. or they go to a diner that's called Beldar's. There's even a one-off interlude in the middle of the run called Who Killed Laura Parr, who is, of course, a resident of Twin Ridges. So there's also a lot of dialogue from the original movies reused, which is highly enjoyable, and I laughed out loud several times. So yeah, I would recommend getting the two big collections first, but if you're not into all that, Ghostbusters International would stand by itself, and if you were any kind of Ghostbusters fan, you have to check these out.
Yeah.
Happy Jacktober.
Back in when I read comics more often than I do now, they had a character called the Beyonder, who was basically like a god from another universe, and they drew him to look exactly like Donny Osmond.
That makes it creepier.
Yeah. And he's like giant wide collars and like this big goofy grin, and I'm all like, you know, I can't be scared.
And then his sister comes out and they do a dance number.
They should have
his 14 brothers from Utah.
Yeah. There's an ad in older comics of like selling back issues, all this tiny print, and there's this little picture of Captain America just kind of smiling. I swear to you, it looks like David Letterman wearing Captain America mask. Amazing.
Do you have the gap and everything?
Yeah. I mean,
that would make it better.
And it might just be just a printing error, but I swear to you, it looks like David Letterman.
I think sometimes they stick stuff in just to see who's paying attention. Yeah. Mike.
So, anyway, in a startling Shyamalan twist, I'm going to forget the reason for the season to recommend something that's not technically horror, but has a monster in it. It could be technically terrifying if you're into disasters. The king of all monsters, that is. Godzilla is one of the things I love that I've not mentioned on this podcast before, mainly because my love of it is an undying love that blinds all criticism. Most Godzilla movies really actually run the gamut from boring to terrible, especially the last American one that was where I became so enraged I got a headache and almost got a nosebleed. You don't show Godzilla in a Godzilla movie. Instead, we focus on Kick-Ass. I don't care about Kick-Ass. Anyway, this time, though, Shin Godzilla is genuinely good enough that I think I could possibly recommend it to non-Godzilla fans. This time, the idea is kind of interesting. So let's basically take the premise that if Godzilla were real and actually menaced Tokyo, what would happen? So instead of focusing on one boring human the whole movie, there are dozens of characters that are like, you know, whoosh, what do you think? You know, what do you think? Oh, you should do this. You know, and mainly in the government and military, but there's also like freelance journalists and like, you know, regular people. And they introduce them with like their name and their job and then like what they're saying. And you have to read really quickly to figure out what's going on. But they're all like specials at their jobs and they're all like yelling at the prime minister. It's great. But much like the original Godzilla was a metaphor about Japan being the only country to have nuclear bombs dropped on it, Shin Godzilla is also about Japan's relationship to the United States. Look out for the American character, quote unquote, who obviously has never spoken English in her entire life. Whoa. Who's supposed to be her goal is to become president in her 40s. And I'm all like, you guys don't know anything about us. This is great.
I love when other cultures try to Americanize us.
Yeah, I know.
It's awesome.
Like, she's got, like, you know, really, you could tell what they're, you know, this is what they think of us. How the self-defense force they have over there is basically a sham. Everything that needs to be done in Japan is tied up in endless bureaucracy. And, of course, the Fukushima nuclear disaster. I literally wept in delight seeing Godzilla use an atomic laser beam from his back spines to shoot down stealth bombers. He turned purple. It was great. Oh, my God. Then he used his tail. It was so cool. And my adult side got to enjoy trenchant social commentary. Monocle. Best film of 2016.
Nice.
What do you
think? Well, because it's Shocktober, I'm going to continue the train ride and recommend a comic book called Frankenstein, Agent of Shade by Jeff Lemire and Alberto Ponticelli. This series ran 16 issues in 2011 after DC Comics' New 52 relaunch. Shade is the superhuman advanced defense executive which pushes all the right buttons for me, because by God do I love an acronym.
They always come with the acronym first and then do something around it.
Oh, you know, my God, I love stuff like that. So, oh, man. So the Shade is like a supernatural version of Marvel Comics S.H.I.E.L.D. It's headquartered in a microscopic city that shrinks down, and you have to shrink down and teleport into it. Cool. And it's led by Father Time, who never dies and is just reincarnated for every periodically. And in this incarnation, Father Time is a young schoolgirl in a domino mask. So Frankenstein is joined by the Creature Commandos, the creature from, and they don't call it the creature from the Black Lagoon, but it's a creature from the Black Lagoon kind of thing. The Wolfman, a vampire, and a mummy.
Cool.
And they go to a monster planet and fight these monsters, and there's Lady Frankenstein in it. And I picked up almost all of the issues in the series for 50 cents a piece because I'm an expert back issue shopper.
Pretty sure we have at least one of them, right?
I don't think we do. I got it from ILL one time, but then I found...
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. And I read almost all of them, and I guess here...
Oh, wait, so, no, I'm thinking of... There's a S.H.I.E.L.D. version now, or they've got a supernatural team.
Oh, yeah, the Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. Or Monster Commander or something like
that. In episode collection.
Yeah.
Evil Robot is not going to fact check the name of the Marvel Monster Squad Commando comic book.
But it's pretty good. It's pretty good. Pretty cool. He's like, he's quoting Milton, and it's great. Bill?
Okay, Shocktober fans, I want to recommend a writer. A few weeks ago at our movies in Maine, I showed the movie Body Parts, written and directed by Eric Red. And if you weren't there, I'm really sorry, because this was like the first R-rated movie we showed, and it was great to see dismemberment and heads being blown off and the F word. And
that missed
it. It was awesome.
Cool. In the library.
It was great. Check it out. Well, Mr. Red is noted for his script, The Hitcher and Near Dark. And when he was kind enough to do an interview with me in my Legends of Film podcast. About a week later, he wrote me back and he said, would you like four novels to put into the library of books he's written? He said he'll gladly send them to me autographed.
Wow.
So sure enough, he did. And we have in our collection now by Eric Red, Don't Stand So Close. The Guns of Santa Sangre.
Santo Sangre.
Santo Sangre.
Do you have a song?
Sangre.
No, I forgot the theme song to that movie.
That means blood in Spanish.
You could do I'm Wrestling with the Armless Mom.
It Waits Below and White Knuckle. So they ought to put you in the mood for this Shocktober. We now have them in their collection, and they're autographed.
Anybody have any creepy corrections?
No.
I don't have a correction, but something Sarah said, something you said last week made me think of something that I would have said had I been here.
Shoot.
My friend Will Bell, whose birthday was October 18th, 2016, his birthday is October 18th. He celebrated it.
TMI.
He celebrates it every year on October 18th. His purple Dodge Spirit in 1996, Jimmy Eat World's Static Prevails was in heavy rotation, and we used to always make fun of the song Rockstar that I think, like, it wasn't the regular lead singer.
Mm-hmm.
They go, your hatter.
That
one's pretty bad, but I liked the one after that, Clarity.
Anyway. Yeah, I like that one. Static Prevails sucks just because it's not him, it's not Jimmy.
Yeah. I saw them. I saw them a few times back in the day.
Yeah, I've seen them. Yeah, like I said,
crazy
recently.
Crazy Fest, Louisville, Kentucky. Anybody?
Nope. Also, other corrections told off mic from the Evil Robot HQ. Amanda meant to say jealousy, not envy, in the October food episode for about Clem Reese ice maker.
Yeah,
you ice cream maker.
Ice cream maker.
Directions.
I should have.
She said jealousy.
Yeah.
She said jealousy.
I said hashtag jealous was what I said. So I should have.
I wrote that down wrong. All right.
Correction to correction.
In episode correction.
Correction number 12766666. No, 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 no. Right. Whatever. Okay. Go to hell, regular hosts. All right. Where are we? Oh, yeah. Okay. Our tuber food episode correction. Envy, not jealousy. Reese ice cream maker.
Wow.
Don't care. Last week, clip at the beginning was Frank Zappa's emotional self-defense about not selling records. All stuff from Evil Robot HQ, who really cares. And for other things about robots and not caring, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Andy.
Next week, special topic we'll reveal then.
Politics.
Politics and dirty
politics,
tricks.
Politics.
Oh, yeah, that one. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Should have written down more, gang.
Presidential election or something.
Jeremy would have had it written down. Yeah.
Somewhere between science and superstition, there is another world. The world of darkness.
That's a tagline for The Exorcist. All right.
We need an old priest and a young priest.
Well, that's Tales from the Dark Side.
Well, then Wikipedia got it wrong.
I trust Bill over Wikipedia.
Yeah, me too.
I never want to pimp Tales from the Dark Side.
That's why I said it.
Correction.
Fascinating correction.
Thank you.
Yeah, whatever.
That's why also why I want you to edit Wikipedia, Bill.
All right.
Wikipedia.
Oh, man, now I feel gross. All right. Hate that show. All right.
Oh, I just want to say, Sarah, welcome to Mike and Jeremy and our club on cannibalism.
Hey, yeah. I'm holding out. Yeah. I talked about it.
Children.
That's
right. Y'all, everybody
talked about it. Amanda, yeah. I didn't know that's what that movie was going to be about when I first watched it. I didn't read the synopsis until after.
Cannibalism.
I was like, what the hell is that?
Yes, we cannibalism.
We're going to have a celebratory banquet later.
That's right, Amanda, too.
I'll bring the hamburgers, lady fingers.
Have you seen the new it?
It's kind of less scary to me because
it
it's like
is.
It's
me
like
too.
It's like I'm dark and menacing. Like,
yeah.
Just a regular clown in the sewers.
Yeah.
I go, okay, exactly. So I'm at Target looking for Halloween stuff for my nieces and nephew.
Sure.
And I'm like looking, moving costumes and stuff around. Someone left a freaking clown mask. Like, bare. I'm like, son of a gun! I was like, what? Because it was like, I'm in black. So the stupid white clown mask buried in the bottom of the Target.